Should be clever and a girl should be smart. Then when they grow up, they'll be good.
Huh? I told you this many kinds of sound can come from a kid.
It's interesting. A little embarrassed, the saintly Babaji said, "Saintly brother, I will teach you as far as I am able, but I am not qualified to be an initiating spiritual master. However that may be, you should now learn about the pure Vaishnava religion." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the original spiritual master of the entire world, teaches that there are three basic truths in the Vaishnava religion. They are Sambandha, the relationship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit soul. 2. Abhideya, the activities in that relationship. And 3. Prayojana, the final goal, which is pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who understands these three truths can act properly. He is a pure Vaishnava, or a pure devotee of the Lord. Within Sambandha, there are three distinct truths. 1. The material world, or the illusory potency Maya. 2. The individual soul, or the subordinate living entity. And 3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one and unrivaled, the master of all powers, all attractive, the abode of all opulence and sweetness, and the only shelter of both the individual spirit souls and the illusory potency Maya. Although he is the only shelter of both the individual spirit souls and the illusory potency Maya, he is always supremely independent, and his transcendental form is both sublimely handsome and eternal. The impersonal Brahman effulgence is merely a distant reflection of the splendor of his limbs. With his potency of transcendental power, Aishi Shakti, he manifests the material universes and places the individual souls within them. Then he expands to become the Supersoul. As the Supersoul, he enters the material universes. In this way, he is the Supreme Controller. When he manifests his feature of supreme opulence, he is Lord Narayana in the spiritual sky. When he manifests his feature of supreme sweetness, he is Lord Krishna Chandra, the Gopi's beloved in Golok Vrindavan. His different forms and pastimes are all limitless and eternal. No person or thing is his equal. Nothing is superior to him. All his forms and pastimes are manifest by his para shakti, transcendental potency. Of his many different transcendental potencies, three are especially known to the individual souls. One of these potencies is called the chit potency. Employing this potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys all his transcendental pastimes. Another of these potencies is called the jiva potency, or the marginal potency. By this potency, limitless individual souls are manifested and maintained. The third potency is called Maya potency. By this potency, all material things, material time, and material activities are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a relationship with the individual spirit souls. The material energy and the individual spirit souls have relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual souls both have relationships with the material energy. These different relationships are called Sambandha. Sambandha is understood when one understands these different relationships. Without first understanding these relationships, it is not possible for anyone to become a pure Vaishnava. So now he's describing to two, he is now starting to train Lahiri Mahashaya in these, in the Vaishnav tradition. So of this, most essential is understanding these three tattvas, the Sambandha, the Abhideya, and the Prayojana. Because if that is understood, then one actually understands everything, how to behave, how everything functions. Because everything can fit into these three categories. There's nothing in the scriptures, there's nothing in any activity, or that cannot be categorized in these three. So if one understands this, then he can actually understand what's going on in the whole, in the spiritual and the material world. So it's a very essential point. Like that. So here he started to explain some, that means the Sambandha is the relationships, the Abhideya is the activities within that relationship, and Prayojana is the goal. So the relationship is that we have Krishna as the Supreme Lord, we're his servant, the material nature is one of his energies that's to be engaged in his service. That's the basic principle of Sambandha. Abhideya, the activities that the living entity performs for the Lord's pleasure. And the Prayojana is the pleasure of the Lord. That he is that developing that pure love for the Lord and him being pleased by these things. So that is the relationship. And then here it explains that first point, there's the Supreme Lord. So in this, then, the biggest thing of these three is to understand the Supreme Lord, because he's the source of everything. So he's the biggest topic of them all. then when we understand him, his position, and then we can understand our position, we can understand the material energy, and then the relationship between us and the Lord, the material energy and the Lord, and us and the material energy. So that's the whole yeah. Then you can know what to do with something. If you don't know the relationship, you can't actually do anything. So any if there's an activity, then these three must be applied. Like that, because the central feature is the activity. That's what one is trying to obtain, is proper activity. So you want to do anything. Let's say you want to, you want to use a knife, right? And you want to cut a potato, right? So then one has to understand the relationship between, you know, your hand, the knife, the potato, and, you know, how what is going to be the platform between, you know, that's going to help in the cutting process between the knife and is on the other side of the potato. Right? So if we don't understand, you know, if we take the potato and, you know, in our hand and then try to, you know, push it on the handle of the knife, we're not going to get much. So we have to know what goes where. The knife goes in our hand, but which hand goes in our hand, right? Right, so the handle goes in our hand, right? And then with the knife, then which side goes towards the potato, right? So hand and knife, then it's the handle goes in our hand, but the blade goes with the potato. But now which side of the blade? Right, there's the sharp side and there's the dull side. So we have to know the sharp side of the knife goes with the potato, right? And then the potato, where is it? You know, do we throw it up in the air? I mean, it's like. So then you have the table. So the knife is on top, the potato is in the middle, and the table is below. Right? If we try it the other way, then the forces of gravity might make it a little difficult. You know. So once one understands all this, then it makes some sense. Right? You can actually do the activity of cutting the potato. Right? So what's the goal? You want the potato cut. Right? So then you have to understand all these things, then the activity can be done properly. So unless these three are understood, no activity can be done. You know? So we've already discussed in the previous chapter about all the conditioned activities. So the sambandha abhideya prayojana that is there in the material world, right? The goal is the heavenly planet, so therefore then there's us and the items of ritual, and then the ritual is performed as the abhideya that will get us that goal of the heavenly planets. You know, or our goal is the Brahman, and then there is ourself, you know, ourself and the material energy. And so then what is the process? We don't deal with it, right? We just study and develop the jnana. So you have our intelligence, you know, and the scriptures. So then in that way it works, but those are all temporary. That's not the eternal religion. So the eternal religion then will be described as a relationship between God, the living entities, and the material world. That's why it's always described. Otherwise, you could describe some relationship of anything. You know, the computer and the table, right? That's relationship. If it goes on top, then you can read it. If it goes on the bottom, it's hard to read. So that has already been discussed in the last chapter. So now, or the previous part of this chapter. So now Lahiri Mahashai wants to know the actual spiritual subject matter, the paravidya. The aparavidya means the material knowledge. That means how the material energy is then engaged in the Lord's service. So it still comes back to the same thing. But the technical points of the aparavidya, or the material knowledge, then technically to work it, it doesn't have to be connected to God. But if you want to get a spiritual benefit out of it, you have to connect it to God. Right? Just like you can... The technicalities of Sanskrit grammar, you don't have to be God-conscious to learn them. Like that. Plenty of grammarians are not Vaishnavas. So it doesn't take that. Or astrology, it doesn't take that one is a Vaishnava to know it, to mechanically work it. Or ritual, you don't have to be a devotee to mechanically work it. Or logic, one doesn't have to be a devotee to mechanically work it. Like that, you know, any of these Vedic sciences. But if you want to purify yourself and go back to Godhead, then you have to know the connection. So therefore, then, God, ourself, and the material energy. So when we say sambandha-abhideya prayojana, that's the real. The other is a temporary definition of them. It's a temporary definition. But the actual real definition has substance, then is this what he's describing now. So yeah. Okay. Any questions on that? Yeah.
This is what we generally hear, that there's a supreme lord, the material energy, and the individual souls are the detached shakti. And in the first chapter, when there was a description of the position of the individual soul, there was something said that it's this detached shakti that actually manifests the material universe and makes it possible for matter and spirit to connect. Mm. What was that?
I only a little idea of that, so I can understand. So the Krishna's mentioning in the Gita, basically the same point, is that it's the living entities that are making this material world happen. And he's describing that in Gita. We know it's because Krishna has entered the material world. Therefore it's going on. The living entity can't do anything. But it's because the living entity desires to be here and do all these activities. That's what's sustaining the universe. It's the desire of the living entities. And to fulfill that desire, then Krishna's entering and making it happen. You know, just like you have in a household. Now, the parents are actually what's running the place. They are maintaining it and, you know, organizing it and all that. But it's because of the children that they're doing that. Right? So you can say the child is sustaining the household. Because if the child's not there, then why have all the house have all these different things? You know, that will be there in the parents' mind. You understand?
Yes,
you know, so in other words, the tatastha shakti, these living entities, is because of their desire, therefore then the material world is manifest. Otherwise there's no need. Right? Because Krishna and the internal potency won't deal with it. Right? Krishna is there, the spiritual potency is there, so then naturally behind the spiritual potency will be a shadow. Right? Krishna is like the sun. Right? So when he shines on the internal potency, it will create a shadow behind the internal potency. Right? But that connection is the tatastha. So Krishna is not going to deal with that shadow, and neither is the internal potency. But the living entity, it has an interest. So those souls that are interested, therefore then it will be manifest where Krishna will then take part and do things with it. Because he's only entering it because of the living entities. He's not entering it otherwise. So does that make any sense? That's as much as I can understand that.
Pushasta says, Yadane Nati Rohati. That's the same principle. He says, Great Pusha, that's why he came and manifested the material energy, material world, because of the living entity has this engine propensity. It's Anna engine propensity. From Taitriya
Upanishad.
Yeah, he described that. So if the living entity wouldn't desire to enjoy, then Krishna wouldn't make it.
Yeah. It means it'll be there, but it won't be operated. You know? So the shadow is there, it has no substance. So the living entity wants to enjoy the spiritual nature. So that's not allowed, because he's not an enjoyer. Like that. So then Krishna has to enter and operate the material energy so it becomes attractive. Because what we're attracted to in this material world is not the material world, it's Krishna. There is nothing attractive here for the living entity. Like that, it's dead matter, so it has nothing to do. One's attracted to something that's like us, right? You know, humans are attracted to humans, dogs to dogs, or, you know, it's like whatever, we find something common, because you have to create relationship, right? So there must be something common to create a relationship. Once relationship is there, then there can be activities. So there has to be something common. So there's nothing common between the living entity and the material world. Not other than that they are energy of the Lord. But otherwise, then the way you would relate, there's nothing in common. It's dead and we're conscious. Right? It doesn't do anything, we're active. It has no content. There's nothing to relate. So Krishna enters it, so that's what makes it attractive. So whatever is attractive in the world, it's actually Krishna. But we don't understand that. Just like if you put, you know, like a colored piece of glass in the window, you know, and it'll be dark. So it's not attractive. We put a light behind it, then it glows nicely, it has a nice color. Then we think the glass is very attractive. But actually it's not. It's the light behind the glass. Like that. So that attractiveness of whatever is there in the world is actually Krishna. But we're not seeing Krishna. We're seeing the material energy. Therefore, there's so much these technical descriptions of how Krishna has entered this material energy and is operating this material energy. So that one can see Krishna in the material energy and his working, rather than see the material energy and that's all. Right? Means anything that's, let's say, yeah, anything attractive. Krishna is the one who's all attractive. So it's his attractiveness that we're seeing. Nothing. But we don't, you know, but at the same time he says all things are in me, but I am not in them. You know? Because otherwise then we'll see, oh, we're very attracted by some material thing, a material object, like a car. So we understand, well, the attractive feature of the car is Krishna. Right, Krishna's all beauty, so the car has, you know, is designed nicely, so it has some beauty. Right, Krishna's power is coming from him, the car has some power, like that. And so all these things are coming from Krishna, so that's what's attractive in it. But we see the car, we don't see Krishna. So then, if we take this philosophy and misuse it, then we go, well, the attractiveness is Krishna, so the car is Krishna, therefore it's all right for me to be attracted to and enjoy the car. Therefore, then Krishna says, but I'm not in them. Because it's not. What we're attracted to, that's not Krishna. Like that. That's why as it changes. As the modes of nature change, then one design, some fashion, some car, some architectural design, you know, what's today is very attractive and everybody's attracted to it, tomorrow nobody wants to look at it. Because Krishna's then moved that attractiveness to some other place by the effect of the modes. Like that. So therefore then it's not attractive anymore. You know, you can't understand how anyone could be attracted. Though we ourselves were attracted previously to the same thing. So it's just, he moves the modes and therefore then we're attracted here and there. Otherwise then we get bored. If we get bored, then what would we do? That makes sense? Anything else? Okay. Lahiri Mahashai said, from the Vaishnavas themselves, I have heard that Vaishnavas surrender to their emotions and therefore they have no need for knowledge. What kind of statement is that? I myself, up to this time, have chanted the holy names of Lord Hari only to attain a certain feeling. I did not strive to understand any relationships. The Babaji said, a Vaishnava's feelings of ecstatic love are the final result of his devotional service. However, such love must be pure. They who think that this ecstatic emotion culminates in oneness with the impersonal Brahman cannot have actions and ecstatic emotions that are pure. Their pure ecstatic emotions are all an empty show. A single drop of pure ecstatic love fulfills all the desires of the spirit soul. However, when that emotion is contaminated by impersonalism, the only result is trouble and calamity for the spirit soul. The devotional emotional displays of one who in his heart thinks he is not different from the impersonal Brahman are merely a trick to cheat the innocent people. Therefore, pure Vaishnavas must thoroughly understand these relationships. Yeah, so one must understand, because in the end it's the emotions that are the prominent thing, but not in the beginning. The beginning, technically there are no emotions, like that. Means there is the desire for sense gratification, you know, and that taste of that sense gratification, that will be there. And there's a need for emotion, so if we learn from the scriptures what is proper emotion and all that, then that becomes, you know, a practical application. But if we don't learn from the scriptures, from authority, what is proper emotion, then we won't actually know how to apply or what it is. So still it's not going to be, I mean, the living entity is not going to be available, because the scriptures have come from the Lord, so it has to be connected. But to come to the platform of pure spiritual emotion, then one must understand how to get, what is the difference between the material and the spiritual, and how to get from one to the other. Therefore, this knowledge then is important, even if it's just the basic, fundamental. But some knowledge has to be there. Otherwise, we will mistake material emotion for spiritual emotion, like that. Especially in this day and age, well, at any time, but especially when actual emotion is not being understood or tasted. So when that is obtained, then we think that this is something so wonderful, like that. But it's something beyond that, you know. In the material world, then you means we may be trained in the sensual platform. So then, and the sensual platform is exploitive. So then we don't have proper relationships with people, or deep relationships. Then if by using the form of religion we find that deep relationships are able to be established, we may completely forget about the spiritual. So we have to know that the spiritual is something beyond that. So the knowledge is important. Is it something beyond that? It's more, right? Suddenly we're turning to the Lord, because the material world is such a difficult place. So then if we find these are working so nicely, then, you know. Therefore, we see that even when these are going on, there's still so much trouble. It's still not the perfection. As we see, like Ramayana and Mahabharata, that the Dharma is going on very nicely. The relationships on the material platform are going on perfectly. Still there's trouble. Still there's not satisfaction. Because the material world is not meant for that. And that's not the position of the soul. Otherwise, still the living entity is relating to another living entity through the medium of the material energy. And they're not actually seeing beyond that. They're not seeing the soul. Like that. Therefore, these aspects of, you know, the religion are temporary, because they deal with the conditioned nature. Right? But you can't just work on the platform of soul without introducing the spiritual culture. And that comes only when there's purity. So by the discharge of devotional service in knowledge, right, with the desire to develop that love for Krishna, then in that fortunate situation, in good association, then we are able to come to the perfectional platform. Otherwise, then we'll just get caught up in the material scene, and then that will be difficult for us. So then there'll be, so if one doesn't come across to the actual spirit, so then the person will be there. We'll see the soul, but what's the relationship? Unless you know God, you don't actually understand relationships with souls. Like that. Because the relationship between souls can only happen if there is the commonality of service to the Lord. Right? Through service to the Lord, transcendental activity, there's relationship, right? Otherwise there's not. Otherwise it's just you're Brahman, I'm Brahman, we're all Brahman, so we're the same Brahman. So where's the relationship? There's no relationship. So that has to go beyond that. It has to go beyond that. Any questions?
Instead, until there's a proper relationship with none, I can't really have a proper relationship with none.
Yeah, basically. Until there's proper relationship with the holy name and the proper performance of the spiritual activities. Like that. But that's where it stops, is relationship with the devotees, relationship with the holy name. You know, and all those things that go with it, with the scriptures, you know, with the Dham, with the deity, like that. So all these are no, these are the main recommended spheres of activity. So if those are right, then the whole process will work. Now, if those aren't understood or not being engaged in properly, then it will be very difficult. So if we're chanting, not chanting properly, chanting with offenses, we're dealing with Vaishnavas not properly, you know, we're not dealing with the deities properly, we don't understand the Dham, or like that, or the scriptures we're not accepting or relating properly with the scriptures, having the faith in the scriptures, then the whole process will become weak, like that. But the central feature is chanting, you know, in the association of devotees. But that association of devotees means then we're going to hear, we're going to get that knowledge, we're going to get this, like what he's discussing now, the Sambandha Gyan. Because then everything else is based on that. If the relationship is not there, the activity can't happen. We'll just say, oh, we won't worry about that, we'll just do. But how can you do unless you know? Then it's foolish. Right? If you want to do an activity that we don't know how to do, and without knowing how to do it, or what are even anything involved in it, we're going to do it. It doesn't make sense. Right? Like we say, we're going to drive a car, but we don't even know what a car is. And how are we going to do it? We're just going to go out, and we've heard where you get in something and, you know, push a few things and move a few things and it goes down the road. You know, we might get in a bullock cart or, you know, anything. you know, get inside a can, you know, like that. We got inside something, you know, push a few things and move a few things, and, you know, so we won't know. Or like you see drawn, like, was it? He didn't know what milk was. So when they handed him water that had some, you know, chalk in it, it was white. You know, he'd heard it was white and this and that, didn't really know. Then he's drinking it and he's very happy. I had drunk milk. So he doesn't know. Therefore, the activity can't be right. And the goal can't be right. So it starts with a sambandha. So one has to understand the relationship. Then it works. So this whole idea is it's just emotion. That's nice, but how do you, even within that, you have to understand. Even you say it's emotion, like the parent is taking care of the child, that's emotion. But there has to be some knowledge, you know, how to feed the child, how to take care of the child, how to deal with the child. Otherwise, the result will not be good. So emotion is not enough. There has to be that knowledge how to do it. Then it comes to the platform of the spiritual emotion. Then there's no longer need of material knowledge. But then there'll be transcendental understanding. You know, what is rasa? What's the proper activities within the rasa? You know, the proper relationships in the rasa. Like that. So that's something else, but the material knowledge won't be necessary. Right? To operate a relationship with Krishna and act in that, one doesn't have to understand the modes of nature. Once one is situated in prema. But to get to prema, one has to understand these things, how the modes of nature work, how we're entangled, how we're caught up, and are trying to establish a relationship with the material world. But once we cross that, then we will understand. Then we can, I mean, once we get to the point of we've crossed the material energy and we've developed that attraction and love for Krishna, then this knowledge is not necessary for developing or cultivating that pure love for Krishna. Like that. But it's useful then for those persons for preaching, because that's the knowledge at which they can help others cross. Anything else on this?
Yes. When you can come on the platform of spiritual emotions.
Spiritual emotions.
By some just speculating, maybe you can just from experience of material emotions you can come on that platform, or by just logic, maybe.
It's something else. It means there's karma and there's jnana, then there's bhakti. Bhakti is something different and independent from this. It's a different entity. So it's not dependent upon this. These are a reflection of that. Right? It's just like from seeing the tree, you can understand the reflection. But by seeing the reflection, you can't really understand the tree. They can give you some idea so that you kind of start to focus. You know, you can point out in the shadow of the tree, well, you know, these rumply, these are where the leaves are. You know, and here this, you know, solid part here, this is where the trunk is. And kind of where the shadow ends, that's where the roots are beyond that, though the shadow doesn't have roots. Right? You know, so you can get some idea, but it itself, you can't transfer from one to the other. You know? Another example is given, let's say you want to point out the moon to somebody. Then you may say, okay, you see that tree over there. Okay, now go up this branch of the tree. And then see there between those leaves, there's a white sphere. That's the moon. So you're using the material energy as something you're going through. But it itself cannot... How you say? It itself cannot actually elevate you to the spiritual platform. Right? If using the shastras, according to the direction of the shastras and the Vaishnavas, then you can use that material knowledge and activities to purify us of this material world. Right? So it's like the taking out a thorn with a thorn. Right? It means they're both the same thing. But one is embedded as giving trouble, and the other one is free from that, and you can take it out. But once you've taken out the other thorn with the second thorn, neither of them have. The first thorn has no use. The second only has use to get rid of the first one. Once you've gotten rid of it, then it has no use either. So it's a different thing. Otherwise, then there are the where this comes from, this idea you don't have to cultivate this knowledge. The Sahajiyas say that. So their whole idea is that the conjugal rasa in the spiritual world, you can understand that if you engage in that conjugal rasa, if you engage in the material conjugal rasa. So if you have, you know, plenty of conjugal activities here, then you just have to make a minor intellectual adjustment, then you understand the spiritual rasa. But it's not like that. The more you become detached from the material conjugal rasa, only then you can understand the spiritual. It's something else. Rasa, you can understand principles of rasa from it, but you can't understand the rasa itself.
Spiritual experience.
By the mercy of the Lord, but the Lord's mercy follows the devotee's mercy. So technically it's by the mercy of the devotees. So by the mercy of the Lord we get the devotees, and by the devotee's mercy then we get the Lord. Like that. So that combination. So therefore we have to, you know, follow the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That will then get us, you know, the Lord's mercy.
Some devotees, they can be like they're following on rules and regulations, but they look very dry, like persons, and not so much attractive. And maybe some other devotees, they look very like emotional, like personally very good, you can relate to them, but not so much knowledge, and it's also like not complete, so something is missing there. So it's where is the middle?
Is one has to go beyond the conditioned nature. Means whether they're devotees or not, there's always living entities who are socially dry and those who are socially not so dry, you know, like that. So that you don't have to be a devotee for that. You'll probably find that the devotee who is very congenial and very nice with everybody, if they were not a devotee, they'd be still the same. And the devotee who is more dry, that probably if they weren't a devotee, they would still be dry. So that's something else. That's nothing to do with the devotional thing. The point is that there's always going to be the performance of the devotional, properly performance of the devotional activities with the desire to please the Lord, that will give realization. So it's the realization that's of value. The knowledge is only a tool to get realization. The activities are a tool to get the realization. Right? So both of them, when they are used to please the Lord, so it's bhakti, then that gives the realization. So bhakti gives realization. Right? That whole process, the devotional process, gives the realization. But only when the activity and the knowledge are combined in devotion to the Lord, that gives the realization. Right? So if one performs the activity without the knowledge, realization may not be very great. Or if he has the knowledge but doesn't perform the activity, then definitely there'll be no realization. Like that, we have to understanding and realization are different things. We may intellectually understand something, but that doesn't mean we realize it. It's when we realize it, we do it. So it's something else. Like that.
That activity must be anushilan, has to be under proper guidance to get free realization.
Yeah. That's why we can't just do whatever we like. Because the emotional platform tends to be, you know, it just moves however it likes. You know, so it's not steady, it'll be flickering. Sometimes it'll be here, sometimes it'll be there.
Emotionally, you mean mind.
Yeah. So it has to be focused. And then also sometimes what we call emotion, we will classify it as emotion, but actually it may be a lower strata. Like lust is not actually considered an emotion. You know, like that. You know, like that, or greed, or envy, or attachment. These things aren't technically, means that's in the modern terms of what they deal with, because that's the non-Vedic materialistic culture. Even the non-Vaishnava Vedic culture will be very strongly influenced by these. So these will be taken as emotion. You know, you see something, you become envious or angry, or these. Then strong feelings come, and we will take this as emotion. And so then we will consider it good. You know, as long as something's going on, some energy or some life is there, it's good. And so we get used to this, you know, low quality of energy or life. You know, so therefore, like sometimes you see, you know, it's like in the family, if the kids are like quiet and not active, then everyone thinks something's wrong. But if they're very active and doing all kinds of things, then everybody's very happy, right? The kid's happy and doing things, right? Happiness is you're active, you know, which is natural. So, but they don't care what activity they do as long as they're active. They can be doing all kinds of crazy things. As long as it's not a particular thing that annoys the parent. It can be annoying everybody else in the universe, but that doesn't matter. As long as it doesn't annoy the parent. As soon as it annoys the parent, of course, then you have to deal with it. So, you're not, then one gets used to the just low quality of energy, low quality of activity. And then we take that is proper emotion. But no, the proper emotion is something else. Like that. It's another thing, you know. That is based on religion, you know, like that, based on religion. So that is also controlled by the modes of nature. So if someone's more pious than from previous, they'll be naturally tend to even without much training, to engage in proper pious activity. And if they're not trained, then they will tend to engage in impious activity. So emotion is something else, right? It's what we're used to is sensual or extended sensual, like that. But there's higher tastes than that, right?
Give me an example of that. What would be an example of that?
It means, you know, like let's say the camaraderie between friends or husband and wife or, you know, parent and child, or master and servant. You know, like that is that it's a different kind of thing. It's based on service. Like that. So means if it's material underlying, if you scratch deep enough, you'll come to the enjoying and how you say, the exploitive nature. But it's packaged in the piety, so it's a very pleasant package. You know, it's the proper package, how the material energy should be functioning. But yeah. But so that is there. You know, just like the one wants to, you know, protect, take care, serve, you know, deal with in a very proper way. Like that. Then that is more the feeling, the relationship, trust, faith, these kind of things, like that. Shelter, or the feeling of being sheltered, you know, these kind of things. So they're different from lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment, illusion. There's something else. that. So the Vedic culture is to establish those relationships by controlling, I mean, those emotions by controlling these lower emotions. Because unless you control lust, greed, anger, and all these things, the higher ones can't be really operated.
And that's why we should always seek higher association.
Yeah, higher association. It means the mind must always be, how you say, improved. You know? Otherwise the mind has a tendency to be, to stay in an unimproved condition. You know, just whatever it dreams up is good enough. But then it has to be trained to come to a higher platform of what things it should desire, what things it shouldn't desire. Otherwise they all come up. You know.
When spiritual attachment
means you have your spiritual activities, and you know, so when we become attached to those activities, so in the beginning that attachment is because we find pleasure in it, but that's fine because still one's attached to spiritual. But eventually it'll be that one is attached to pleasing Krishna through those activities. Just like in the beginning we become attached to chanting because it's nice. But ultimately, because the name is Krishna, but we're still attached for our own purposes. We find pleasure in it. It makes our mind peaceful, makes the heart satisfied. But that's us. So, but as we do that, still, because it's focused on Krishna, we will become elevated, and from that taste will come attachment, and from that attachment will come a static emotion, and then in there it will transform into its purpose is pleasing Krishna, and then it will transform into prema. So the whole idea is anything we're attracted to Krishna, then that's good. But we have to understand that there's still, it has to be developed. You know, the attractions there today has to be developed. So it's always, it's dynamic. It's always expanding. We never just leave it. Something that you just leave doesn't get better. Faithful Lahiri Mahashaya then said, "Is there something higher than the impersonal Brahman? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of the impersonal Brahman. Then why do the philosophers not leave the impersonal Brahman and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead?" The saintly Babaji laughed and said, "Brahma, the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Narada, Shiva, and all other truly great philosophers took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's feet." Lahiri Mahashaya said, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form situated within space. Then that form must also be limited in spatial terms. How then can the spatially limited form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead be the resting place of the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman?" The Babaji replied, "Even in the material world, the element ether is also all-pervading and spatially limitless. Why then should the impersonal Brahman be considered so glorious merely because it is all-pervading and spatially limitless?" Spatially or spatially?
It sounds like it's spatially.
Yeah, but there's no... Okay. It's just such a different spelling. And spatially limitless. "From the splendor of his transcendental limbs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman. and at the same time his transcendental form is spatially limited, situated in a specific place. Who has seen anyone like him? Because no one is like him, and because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. His form is wonderfully attractive. In his transcendental form, all-pervasiveness, omniscience, omnipotence, the greatest mercy, and the greatest bliss are gloriously manifest in their completeness. Is this form good? What virtue does it not have? What power does it not have? It is an amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable something. Is an amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable something good? The truth is that the impersonal Brahman is the qualityless aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Personality and impersonality exist side by side in the handsome form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal Brahman is merely one aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This formless, changeless, qualityless, unknowable, and immeasurable feature of the Lord is liked by short-sighted persons. However, they who see everything do not like any feature but the original and complete form of the Lord. The Vaishnavas cannot place their faith in the formless, impersonal Brahman. For to do so would block their eternal nature and also block their pure love for Lord Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the resting place of both features, the qualityless Brahman and the quality-filled Supreme Person. He is an ocean of transcendental bliss, and therefore he is attractive to all pure souls, all pure spirit souls. Lahiri, Krishna was born, performed activities, and then left his body at death. How is it possible that his form is eternal? Babaji, Sri Krishna's form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. His birth, activities, and so-called death are not material. Lahiri, why do the Mahabharata and other scriptures describe him in that way? Babaji, the eternal absolute truth is beyond description. Pure souls see Lord Krishna's form in pastimes. These persons then describe these both with words. These words are like ordinary historical accounts of material persons. They who know the true meaning of the Mahabharata and other scriptures understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in one way, and the unintelligent materialists understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in a different way. Lahiri, when one meditates on Lord Krishna's form, in one's heart naturally rises the idea of a form limited by both time and space. What other way is there to think of Lord Krishna's form? Babaji, thinking is an activity of the mind. As long as the mind is not purified and spiritualized, the mind's activity of thinking and meditating cannot be spiritual in its nature. When it develops a devotional attitude, the mind gradually becomes spiritualized. Then the mind's activity of thinking and meditating is inevitably spiritual in nature. When the Vaishnava devotees who delight in devotional service chant the holy names of Lord Hari, the material world has no power to touch them. They are spiritualized. Residing in the spiritual world, they meditate on Lord Krishna's daily activities. In this way, they obtain the bliss of confidential service to the Lord. Lahiri, please be merciful and give that spiritual understanding to me. Babaji, when you give up all material arguments and doubts, and when you chant the holy names day after day, then after a few days, genuine spiritual understanding will arise in your heart. As long as these material arguments remain, your mind will stay in the shackles of material understanding. When you taste the nectar of the holy name, the material shackles will become loosened. Then the spiritual world will be gloriously manifested in your heart. Lahiri, please be merciful and tell me about that I desire. So we see here is that as long as the anarta nivriti has not developed enough, then one will stay bound up in the kind of material concepts. But as an Artha Nivritti becomes more developed, more manifest, then one can get to the stage where one tastes the holy name, Aruchi. So at that point, then very quickly it develops. So from Shraddha up to Nishta, that's a little slow. Then Nishta, one can go through very quickly to Ruchi. And then from Ruchi, then it works, starts to go very quickly. Babaji, the mind in words cannot understand it. Only when one obtains the bliss of spiritual life can one understand it. Give up all your arguments, and for a few days chant the holy names of Lord Hari. Then all your doubts will go far away. Then you will no longer ask any question of anyone. Lahiri, I know that a person who has faith in Lord Krishna and tastes the nectar of his holy names attains the highest of all goals. I well understood the relationship of the Lord and the individual soul. I will take shelter of the Lord's holy names. Babaji, that is the best of all. Understand well your relationship with the Lord, and you will directly see the spiritual truth. Lahiri, I understand the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate form of the Supreme. The impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul are subordinate to him. He is all-pervading. In the spiritual world, he manifests his wonderful form. He is a person. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He is the master of all potencies. Even though he is the master of all potencies, he is always overcome with bliss in the company of his Hladini Shakti, pleasure potency. Now please tell me about the individual spirit souls. Babaji, among the limitless potencies of Sri Krishna, one is called Tatastha Shakti, positioned between the spiritual and material worlds. This potency can reside in either of them. This potency is also called Jiva Tattva, the individual spirit souls. The individual souls are tiny particles of spirit. Because they are tiny particles, they may attain bondage in the material world. However, because they are pure spirit, they may also reside eternally in the supremely blissful spiritual world. The individual spirit souls are of two kinds. One, souls who reside in the spiritual world. And two, souls in bondage who reside in the material world. Souls in bondage in the material world are of two kinds, one, intelligent, and two, unintelligent. Birds, beasts, and human beings who do not strive to attain the supreme goal are the unintelligent, materially bound souls. Human beings who follow the path of the Vaishnava religion are intelligent. They who are not Vaishnavas, do not actively strive for the real goal of life. Therefore, the scriptures declare the service to Vaishnavas and association with Vaishnavas are the best of all activities. Intelligent human beings who have faith in the scriptures and chant the holy names of Lord Hari naturally associate with Vaishnavas. They who are not intelligent do not have faith in the scriptures and do not chant the holy names of Lord Krishna. Even though they may serve the deity form of Lord Krishna according to the rules passed down through the disciplic succession, in their hearts such unintelligent persons do not properly honor Vaishnavas. Lahiri. Now I understand the truth about Lord Krishna and the truth about the individual spirit souls. Now please tell me the truth about the illusory potency Maya. Babaji. Maya is matter. Maya is one of the potencies of Lord Krishna. Maya is also called apara shakti, material potency, and bahiranga shakti, external potency. As a shadow stays far away from light, so Maya stays far away from Lord Krishna and his devotees. Maya manifested the 14 material worlds, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, which makes one think, I am this material body. The gross and subtle material bodies of the bound souls are manifested by Maya. When a soul attains liberation, his spiritual body is cleansed of Maya's influence. To the extent he is tightly bound by Maya, to that extent the soul is far away from Lord Krishna. To the extent the soul is free from Maya's influence, to that extent the soul is able to see Lord Krishna face to face. The material universe, which is a place of sense pleasures for the bound souls, has sprouted from Lord Krishna's will. The spirit souls do not stay forever in the material world. The material world is only a prison for the spirit souls. Lahiri, O Master, now please tell me of the eternal relationship that exists between Maya, the individual soul, and Lord Krishna. Babaji, the tiny spirit soul is an eternal servant of Lord Krishna. The world of Maya is the soul's prison. By associating with devotees and chanting the holy names, the soul attains Lord Krishna's mercy. Then, restored to his original spiritual form, the soul tastes the nectar of direct service to Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. These are the confidential relationships between these three. Without understanding this, how can anyone engage in devotional service? His devotees. Maya manifested the 14 material worlds, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, which makes one think, I am this material body. The gross and subtle material bodies of the bound souls are manifested by Maya. When a soul attains liberation, his spiritual body is cleansed of Maya's influence. To the extent he is tightly bound by Maya, to that extent the soul is far away from Lord Krishna. To the extent the soul is free from Maya's influence, to that extent the soul is able to see Lord Krishna face to face. The material universe, which is a place of sense pleasures for the bound souls, has sprouted from Lord Krishna's will. The spirit souls do not stay forever in the material world. The material world is only a prison for the spirit souls. Lahiri, O Master, now please tell me of the eternal relationship that exists between Maya, the individual soul, and Lord Krishna. Babaji, the tiny spirit soul is an eternal servant of Lord Krishna. The world of Maya is the soul's prison. By associating with devotees and chanting the holy names, the soul attains Lord Krishna's mercy. Then, restored to his original spiritual form, the soul tastes the nectar of direct service to Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. These are the confidential relationships between these three. Without understanding this, how can anyone engage in devotional service? Lahiri, if one should carefully attain this knowledge, must one become a great scholar before becoming a Vaishnava? Babaji, a Vaishnava need not study different languages and become a great scholar. To throw far away the bewilderments presented by Maya, what the soul must do is take shelter at the feet of a bona fide Vaishnava spiritual master. By the spiritual master's words of instruction and by the disciple's own spiritual activities, the disciple comes to understand truth of these relationships. This is called diksha, initiation, and siksha, instruction. Lahiri, what does one do after initiation and instruction? Babaji, living a moral life, one should serve Lord Krishna. This is called abhideya. Because it is clearly described in the Vedas and all other scriptures, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called this activity abhideya. Lahiri, with tears in his eyes, O spiritual master, I take shelter of your feet. By hearing the honey of your words, I now understand my relationship with Lord Krishna. By your mercy, all my previous ideas of caste, knowledge, and spiritual instruction are thrown far away. Now please mercifully instruct me about abhideya. Babaji, there need be no more worry Now that you are humble, Sri Krishna Chaitanya will certainly be merciful to you. Association with devotees is the only cure for souls bound in the material world. The bona fide spiritual master mercifully teaches one how to serve Lord Krishna. By engaging in devotional service, one gradually attains the goal of life. Thus, devotional service is called Abhideya. Lahiri, please tell me, how does one serve Lord Hari? Babaji, devotional service to Lord Hari is called Bhakti. Bhakti has three stages. 1. Sadhana, devotional service and practice. 2. Bhava, ecstasy. And 3. Prema, pure love. The beginning stage is sadhana. By again and again performing sadhana, bhava is manifested. When bhava becomes perfect, it is called prema. Lahiri, what are the different kinds of sadhana and how are they performed? Please teach me that. Babaji, in his book Sri Hari Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has elaborately described all this. I will give a brief summary. There are 9 kinds of sadhana. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.23, it is said, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smarnam Parasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Shakyam Atmani Vedanam. Hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu, remembering them, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 items of paraphernalia, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming his servant, considering the Lord one's best friend, and surrendering everything unto him, in other words, serving him with the body, mind, and words. These 9 processes are accepted as pure devotional service. Thus in Srimad Bhagavatam it is written that the 9 kinds of sadhana bhakti are hearing and chanting about the transcendental holy name, of name, form, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes of Lord Vishnu. 2. Remembering them. 3. Serving the lotus feet of the Lord. 4. Offering the Lord respectful worship with 16 types of paraphernalia. 5. Offering prayers to the Lord. 6. Becoming a servant. 7. Considering the Lord one's best friend. And 8. Surrendering everything unto him. Seems there's a numbering problem here.
Put the first 2 together.
Yeah, the first 2 together. You'd think the translator would have figured that out. Describing the different limbs and sublimbs that are parts of these, Srila Rupa Goswami describes 64 different kinds of sadhana bhakti. While considering these points, another topic needs to be explained. Sadhana bhakti is of 2 kinds, vaidhi, according to rules and regulations, and 2, raga anuga, spontaneous. In Vaidhi Bhakti, one engages in the 9 kinds of activities previously described. In Raganuga Bhakti, one engages in the activities of Sadhana Bhakti, but one becomes a follower of the people of Raja, and in one's mind, one serves Lord Krishna as they do. One should engage in the kind of Sadhana Bhakti for which he is qualified. Lahiri. How does one know he is qualified for one or the other of these kinds of Sadhana Bhakti? Babaji. A faithful person who follows the rules and regulations is qualified. In the beginning, his spiritual master teaches him Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Then, when the disciple becomes qualified, the spiritual master teaches him how to worship the Lord by following the path of Raga Anuga Bhakti. Lahiri, how does a person know he has become qualified for this? Babaji, one who has not yet experienced in his heart the love that characterizes Raga Anuga Bhakti, and who instead wishes to serve the Lord according to the rules and regulations described in the scriptures, is qualified to engage in Vaidhi Bhakti. One who does not wish to be ruled by the scriptures' rules and regulations in his devotional service to Lord Hari, and in whose heart a spontaneous love for Lord Hari's devotional service has become manifested, is qualified to engage in Raga Anuga Bhakti. We see here is that one likes to do according to the rules, and serve the Lord in this way. The other one is that, not being controlled by them, one has a spontaneous attraction for the devotional service. It didn't say Krishna. Right? Otherwise, then the sahaja idea is just, I spontaneous just for Krishna. But what it means is spontaneous attraction to the Lord's devotional service. It means one is spontaneously attracted to hear and chant and glorify and do these devotional activities. One likes doing them. One has a taste for them, an attraction for them. Like that. That's the spontaneous. It's not, because that then will mature into having that towards Krishna. Right? The other one is one wants to serve Krishna through these rules. He likes doing the rules, but he's controlled by the rules. The other is he's not controlled by the rules. He likes to do those activities. Right? The rule is you should chant, and we feel comfortable being controlled by that. We're chanting because it's the rule. The other is that we're not controlled by that rule, that we're chanting because it's the rule. We're chanting because we like to chant. So otherwise we can easily take this, you know, especially in the modern context, is that you don't like to be controlled by the rules. And I go, well, nobody wants to be controlled by any rules, so therefore everybody's on the spontaneous platform. But they have a spontaneous love for Lord Hari's devotional service. That's what they have. So that's what makes the difference between being unregulated, not following Vaidhi sadhana, in other words, just following some speculative form of one's own choice, and Raghunuga Bhakti. They're two different things. The tendency is just, well, I'm not controlled by the rule. I do anything I like. I get up when I like. I chant when I like. I eat when I like. You know, like that. No, that's not what it means. It means you're spontaneously attracted to chant Krishna's names. It doesn't matter that, okay, at this time of the day you chant, and then at this time of the day you don't. No, you chant all the time. You know, you're spontaneously attracted to take Krishna's prasad. So it's not that you're only interested in only that kind of prasad. You just like prasadam, because it's Krishna. So anything is, you know, one has attraction to. You know? And because it's Krishna, and this is Krishna's body, therefore one only honors the prasad according to the need of the body. You know, it's just, I mean, of course you may have a prasadam devotee, he's spontaneously attracted. Anytime he gets his hands on anything, he'll eat all day, you know, and gorge himself. But that's not spontaneous devotional service. You know? It's at least it's directed at Krishna's attraction for Krishna. But it's still not what you call Raghunuga. So that's why the knowledge is important, that one can discriminate between these. Otherwise, then one may end up on doing so many strange things and calling it that one is advanced. Lahiri, oh Master, please. Any questions on that? Yes.
I would like to ask, in this modern time in our movement, we can notice that some devotees are a little bit burned out because of certain reasons, and then they went out and take shelter in some other processes. For instance, somebody's going to Radha Kund and taking initiation from Babaji, or somebody's going to Narayan Maharaj and so on. And what is confusing a little bit for me, that I didn't notice that they are unhappy when they are there, but they look quite inspired. And I was thinking, I mean, and here I noticed many devotees who struggle with this process. And I agree this is process, I mean, I like, but I'm a little bit confused about this. What is actually a problem?
Means, see, when you do something for a long time, then if you want to get a taste out of it, you have to go deeper into it. Otherwise it becomes ritualistic. Right? So if one has trouble with having that capacity, then a change in the environment appears to be enlivening, because it's something new, different. But with time, that will also become stale. Right? Then you're again faced with the same things. You know, our heart is, you know, dirty, and we have to clean it. If we want to go back to Godhead, you know, then we have to become serious. So, by that change of environment, then one gets distracted. One doesn't have to worry about that. It's attractive, it's nice, you know. So that's there, but at some point, that also, one has to enter it. Mm-hmm. And then difficulty will be there. How long have they been doing it? How long have they been sitting at Radha Kund? 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years? Right? And the other process, then how long they were doing. The other thing is whether they're following the process properly. Is that if one is offensive to Vaishnavas, critical of Vaishnavas, then naturally one's not going to get any taste. So if they change the situation and they don't do that, then those reactions may not be coming. But still, the point's going to come. They will have to go deeply into whatever they're doing. And that means facing, they have a conditioned nature and they are not perfect. And they have to change that. Right? While the other thing, it looks like, okay, maybe it's nice, it's attractive, and one's happy. But still, at one point, then the question has to come, is what about all your previous material desires? You know? You had all these things. You turned away your attention from Krishna to follow these things. Now you're saying that you're giving, you know, give up everything to surrender to Krishna. But what about these desires? So they will have to be, you know, one by one inspected and to see if you have no desire for them. And so for many that process is difficult. You know, especially when you know, position, facilities, this and that, you know. We've been around a long time, we've been 20, 30 years in the movement, and then what's the show for it? Right? So many others, you know, big positions, and so many facilities, and influence, and that, and what do I have? Nothing. Right? So that will be very difficult, because that's not, spiritual life has nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with spiritual life. Engaging the conditioned nature, there, if someone has the capacity, material capacity, to do big organizational things, then the best thing is to do those big organizational things for Krishna. But what has that got to do with that we're doing it, or that position of doing it? Right? So one has to be humble. So whether one's doing big things or small things, one should be engaged according to one's nature. So, to look at all those things, many may not be very comfortable with them. So it is very easy to go somewhere else. Right? It is very easy to go somewhere else. It's just like you have, let's say you have, you know, a community. Right? And in this community, there's so many families. And in those families, some of them are running very nicely, and the relationships in the families are quite pleasant, and some of those families just weren't running very badly. They don't work very nicely at all. Right? So then someone may find, by leaving that family and that community and going somewhere else, people don't know them and don't have any ideas, oh, you did this before and you did that before, and neither do they have that towards those people. And so then it may seemingly in the beginning go nicely. But one has to see if with time it goes nicely. But now another aspect is, so that's what we've just explained. Now the other aspect is, why were they in that situation in the first place? Why were they born in that family that didn't work properly due to great pious results? No. So why are they in a situation where, you know, they're fried out by the temple president, and this one fries them out there, and there's so much politics and this and that? But only someone who they themselves are political can get caught up in politics. You understand? When you say this person was political and this one did this and that one did that, but you yourself have to agree to be in it. And how will you agree unless you have politics within yourself to get involved? Right? You only get involved in something that you have the qualities of. You don't get involved in something you don't have the qualities of. You have managing abilities, you get caught up in management. You know? One is into art, then one gets caught up in art. One doesn't get caught up in something else. You know? Whatever is one's quality, one will get caught up in that and will be affected to that, because that's where one's attachments are. You know, it's just like you have a nice, you know, big abhishek and all that, and all the devotees are very happy and ecstatic and all that, they're watching this and that. There may be so many problems going on and all the pujaris are fried. No one else is fried. They couldn't care less about, you know, that, you know, the yogurt was put in the wrong pot and this didn't have a tulsi leaf in it, and, you know, and the kusasan wasn't there, and everybody else is just, the deity is there, he's being bathed nicely, it's a wonderful festival. And the pujaris are all bent out of shape, worst abhishek I've ever had. You know, everybody else is happy. Right? So, that's the point. So it's easy to blame others. You know? It's easy to blame others. But the problem is if we follow it, it will come back to us. We chose to come here. We chose to stay here. You know? And we chose to engage in the activities here in the material world. Therefore, we chose to get the results of that. So that is the difficult thing, is how many are willing to actually just look and accept that I'm the rat bag, not somebody else. That's the difficulty because of the false ego. That's why it said, Trinadapisanichina, Tarodapisanichina, be humble and tolerant. If those are there, then you can respect others and not expect respect for yourself. Otherwise, what is it? How can they speak like this to me? I've been in the temple, I did so much Sankirtan. That's humility? Or that's pride? So you are praising yourself and not offering respect to others. Now, what does Lord Chaitanya recommend?
Opposite.
Yeah. So if you look at it, any situation where devotees are fried out, and you look at it very carefully, then you will see that the modes of nature are very much at work, and both parties are wrong. You might find that according to, you know, the traditions and other things, one person may be wrong. Of course, it's always there that the leader should come up to a particular standard. But the point is one living entity. So that's another discussion. You know, that the temple president could behave like that, that's wrong, yes. Question may be whether they are qualified to be temple president or not. That's there. That is another discussion. That has nothing to do with the devotee becoming burnt out. These two separate discussions. One is whether for them, the temple president, to advance, that soul who's the temple president, is that the best service for them? Do they have the conditioned nature to do that? Right? If they do, then they need to be trained how to do it so that they do it properly. And if they don't, it's obvious because they're upsetting everybody. So they should do something else. That's one discussion. But why were we in the situation where we got disturbed? Right? One living entity's karma is going to be, the results are going to be given through another living entity. The material nature is dead matter. It's not going to give it. Right? The material energy is not going to come through another living entity. So therefore, we were supposed to be dealt with in this rough way. So there was this living entity who had the qualifications to do it. And the material energy engaged them to do it. Does that make sense? Right? So therefore, it happened to us. Like that. Not that the living entity who was the instrument is going to get any pious credit for that. No, if the activity was wrong, they're also going to get a reaction. But that's a separate discussion. It means if we want to get caught up in that and always eternally be looking outside ourselves for our happiness and for, you know, the cause of our distress, we can do that, and then we're going to stay in this material world for a long time. So we have to be able to look within and see the soul and understand the soul is conditioned. So what is the nature of that conditioning? So therefore, I think I'm something worthwhile that the temple president shouldn't be yelling at me. But that's my ego. You know, but temple president shouldn't manage like this. So that means you're the authority on management? Okay, if you are, then you can do it. But the point is you have that mood of management. Therefore, you run into, you know, loggerheads with someone else who has it. But only according to your karma. And this is the difficult thing for anyone to digest. It comes back to us. That's the bottom line. It's no one else's fault. Others may be used as the instrument, but it is no one else's fault. Not one other living entity's fault. It's our fault. Bus. So when we're able to accept that, then you can make dynamic advancement. So whether you do it here or there, but the point is the same thing has to be done. Same thing has to be done. So it's not a matter of running away, it's just a matter of, you know, getting serious. Is that making sense? Yes, no?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Temple presidents should be trained. What do you mean by that?
That's another discussion. That's how that means. Just, you know, what is how proper management and what is all these different things. You know, that we see in the Bhagavatam. You know, how the big organizers organize things.
Does it mean just to be a good devotee with a good qualities or some special training? Like
both. Both. It's just like for any art or science, there needs to be training.
Do we have somewhere? No, we don't have it. Like here in Mayapur, they are organizing a teacher training course that is going on, but some other courses.
These will come with time.
I have one more question.
Is it related to this? No. Oh, yours is related to this? Yeah, we'll come back.
Did you say that getting the association with devotees is not dependent on karma? But it seems that what kind of devotees association would get is related. So I'm not sure how that goes.
Yeah. Because, see, we'll be attracted by certain nature, like that. So that's why it's also, one should associate with those more advanced. It means it'll be similar character, but it will be advanced on that. So that will inspire us to move forward. So everybody's individual and you know, unique in their that mix of what. So then one associates with those devotees in which those qualities that we have will naturally be seen in their more advanced form, or properly engaged form, you know, properly purified form. You know, therefore we might find we like to hear from many, many devotees, because one will take care of one aspect, another aspect, another aspect. But we have to be respectful to everybody, even if someone we can't relate to them, still we have to be respectful.
So thinking about like someone joining the movement, so we join because it's not our karma that we join, we got the mercy of the devotees in their association, but then we join at a certain temple, so then it seems that what kind of a temple president is there and what kind of devotees are there, that seems to be related to our karma.
It's not necessarily, yeah, karma may be involved, but it's more a sincerity. Like that. Because you see, sometimes there is, you know, you see many times, like these, you know, they have these articles in the BTG on how someone became a devotee. I can't remember who it was, but they were in America, and the city where they lived, there were devotees. And they might have seen them once or twice here or there, but didn't take much notice. Then they went to Europe and were traveling in Europe. That's when they bumped into devotees, became a devotee, and then stayed in that yatra. You know, so, you know, it's, how do you say? Krishna and the material energy, they're good organizers. They're good at these things. See, the whole thing is bhakti is beyond, but our conditioned nature is also involved. Like that. Bhakti is the essential thing, but because we're conditioned, we tend to relate to bhakti through our conditioned nature. Just like that, is that if we were looking at devotion as I'm an individual spirit soul, I'm you know, foolish for being here, and whatever nonsense I get, I deserve, because, you know, I've done the activities, so I'm going to get it. So however it comes in whatever forms is Krishna's mercy. Right? But as soon as it's why I'm getting this, why I'm getting that, because we're not that is the conditioned nature. That's not the soul speaking. That's the soul thinking that they are the conditioned nature. Now, is Haridas Thakur complaining that he's being beaten in 22 markets? No, he just goes on chanting. Of course, this is a very extreme example, but this is showing that even in a situation like this, which we're not going through, you know, the temple president isn't taking us out, taking us, you know, putting us in the back of the van and taking us out in one market and then flogging us and then going to the next mall and then flogging us and then the flea market and flogging us. Like, no, it's not happening. Like that. So it's very severe. And so, but even in this situation, the devotee is able to maintain that humility and all that. Not only after that, then at the end, Haridas Thakur notices, means they don't notice that how is it this person is perfectly happy and hasn't died. You know, they haven't asked that question, right? If they were smart, they would ask that. You know, what is it that, you know, you're doing or having? I mean, why is it this is there? Everybody, you know, we beat so many people and they're so miserable and this and that. You're not miserable, so what is there? Then he would have explained to them the chanting the holy name and serving the Lord. They didn't. But he was noticing they're getting distressed, because then, you know, they went to all 22 markets and there's no more markets, you know, and he's supposed to be dead. And he's not. And so then when they go back and they're all going to say, so, you know, the infidel is dead, and they're going to say, no, he's perfectly happy sitting down there in the last market. So they're going to get in trouble. Right? So then Haridas Thakur, understanding that, then he just, you know, just goes into samadhi. So then he looks dead. So then they're very happy, you know. So they throw them into the Ganga, because if he was a proper Muslim, they would bury him. But since, you know, he's not, then therefore they throw him in the river, right? So then he, you know, floats across the river, and when he reaches the other side, then he hoodie-bowl gets up, you know, like that. So that's the thing. But he is worried about them, and they're the ones that are the instrument, because they're just an instrument. They're an instrument for him being beaten, but they, as individual souls, that's another story. They're in distress. So he's worried about their distress. He's not worrying that they're the ones that are being used as the instrument. Because that changes. Material energy may use this person as an instrument, that person as an instrument, this situation, that situation. That's something different from the living entity. These are finer points. That makes sense? Like that. Yeah, so that's why these things are there in the scriptures, so we can understand how to separate yourself from it. You know, this is the knowledge. Then one has to practice it. And then by that practice one gets a realization. Then in any situation one is able to apply it. Otherwise then one may find that, you know, sitting here, it, you know, works very nicely, and then when we get out there, and as soon as someone makes a comment, then immediately it's like, hey, what's going on, you know? Like that. So then that takes practice. Then we remember, oh yeah, that's right, you know? And then slowly, we apply it, and then it becomes habit. That's why sadhana bhakti, it's practice. One knows what one should do, but one can't always do it. One keeps going and keeps practicing. Makes sense? Anything else on this point? Or? You read that first.
What is bhakti? From the beginning, what is the translation for that word? What does this mean? In this, Babaji Maharaj was explaining in connection with Abhideya, when we just started. Can you explain more? Oh.
Means the, what do you call it? Bhakti means that devotion towards the Lord, that one is rendering service to the Lord for the Lord's satisfaction. That's bhakti. But because we are conditioned, we think we are the Lord and we're the enjoyer. So that whole, and that mood then has then created a whole set of, you know, just the whole gross and subtle body is adjusted around that. I am the enjoyer, and that's then created the subtle body, and that's created the gross body. So this knowledge then is the activities, the knowledge is then how to understand that so that we can separate ourselves from that. Right? So that we're not part of it. We're different from it.
Okay. It's not Prayojana or
it's not?
It's only Abhideya Bhakti.
Point is, it's the whole thing. It means these are aspects of the bhakti. The bhakti itself as a tattva is a combination between activities done in devotion. That combination is called bhakti. Right? Because you have the activity, the abhideya. When abhideya and prayojana are combined, that's the bhakti shakti. Right? But now, to perform an activity and have that goal, there must be a relationship and an attraction. So the basis of everything, of existence, is then the sandhini potency of the sambandha. Right? So without that, you don't have the other. But it has no meaning unless it's applied. You have a relationship but don't do anything, then it's not really a relationship. Right? Unless there's some attraction and some attachment, then the activity won't happen. Right? But the goal is that activities are going on, and in that then the rasa is tasted.
What is our goal? To develop the bhakti? Or
yeah, pure love for Krishna. That's our goal. Means that bhakti is the means, bhakti is the end. That's what's so nice about it. We may engage the material energy as a means, but it's only useful if bhakti is mixed into it. Because at the end, then the material energy will drop away and all that will be left is the bhakti.
Just proper to say that, when you develop bhakti, the end of this is prema, something like this. Bhakti is developing.
Bhakti is prema, but it's just that in our conditioned state, then that bhakti is mixed with karma and jnana, like that. So if we understand that, and we understand how to apply that, then we can use that as a tool to remove it, you know, like the thorn in the thorn. You know, just as the thorn, by its pointy nature, gets into our skin, the same way with the thorn, we can take the other one out. So the same things that bound us, we can use them to unbind yourself. Therefore, there's so much description of the material energy in the scriptures. How it works, how one came from the other. Right? It means if you see that the living entities come into the material energy, and you know what comes with them is time and false ego, and then it becomes, you know, charged. It becomes mahatattva. So life is, you know, based on this, you know, ego done with, you know, activities done in false ego. So when activities are not done in false ego, there is no material energy. It remains as inert matter. And then you add more ego, right? And then out pops, you know, the ego. You add more again, out pops the intelligence. Add more again, out pops the mind. Add more again, and out come all the senses and all the elements and all these things. So we can understand is when if you remove the ego, the whole material world just folds up and disappears. Right? So those activities done in false ego is what keeps us here. Therefore, it's a useless endeavor, all these things, justice, this, that, for ourselves, for, you know, proper culture being followed and proper this and that. That's another thing. But that's based on the scriptures. But as far as our own personal thing of justice, and this one did this, and that one did that, and this one said this, and, you know, why I don't have that, that's just false ego. That's just going to keep us here more and more and more. So it feels very inspiring, right? It's, how you say it? Modern term, empowering, right? Material nature is empowered when the false ego comes in. Otherwise, it's just dead. Pradhana is just dead. But as soon as the ego comes in, it's empowered. So therefore, we get all fired up. Why this one did this, that one did that, it's ego. And we feel good, right? We're empowered. The problem is we're empowered materially. So the Vaishnava thing is it's the other way. You depower, you know, unempower the material side, and then you empower the spiritual. Because the whole thing is there is false ego. So therefore, with real ego, that I am servant of Krishna, then you empower the spiritual. Then you go into the spiritual. Otherwise, with false ego, you empower the material and go into the material world. So therefore, it's up to you. Do you want to stay here to keep going through justice and all these different things? Means that you can stay here a long time. We've been here a long time. We can stay here more. Or do we want to get out? So getting out is a different thing. You know, it's a different thing. You know, it doesn't matter how expert we're able to ride the horsey on the carousel, you know, and how nice our horsey is and the other guy's horsey is not as good. If you want to get off the carousel, you got to get off the horse and just leave the horse behind. That's it. So getting out of the carousel is something different than being on the carousel. So that's the thing. If we're interested in the justice, this, that, and position and facility, great. But we have to be here in the material world to do it. And if we want to go back to Godhead, that's a different discussion. Therefore, we just have to give those things up. What about?
Gyanis.
Oh.
They know the goal?
They don't know the goal. Their goal is only as far as Brahman. That's why everything else will be... If their goal is only as far as Brahman, means they don't actually understand Samanda. And they definitely don't understand Abhideya. They only understand the Samanda and Abhideya in relationship to their goal. So therefore, it's not complete.
But still, they have some bhakti. They have some devotion to their scriptures.
No bhakti.
At all, no?
That's just motivation. They have material devotion, but they don't have spiritual devotion. That's a different thing.
Maybe it's covered.
Covered, yes.
Yeah, like I understand that it's bhakti, like... something spiritual that every living entity has inside, but it just covered.
Yeah, but everything's Brahman. everything's spiritual. Ultimately, the material energy is also Brahman. It's just been covered by a cloud, so it's dark. But it's also Brahman. Everything's Brahman. Right? But it's just that this Brahman, if you get entangled with it, then there's problems. But if you understand the nature of Brahman, then one's not involved in it, and so one's not affected by it. But still, that doesn't engage the living entity. Brahman is only Sat, which means eternal. Right? But the soul is Chit and Ananda also. So therefore, the Brahman can't engage. So they can't have a complete understanding of the soul. So it's a partial understanding, but that doesn't make a bhakti. Because bhakti is personal.
Right. Since we are getting bhakti only by association with devotees, like yeah. other entities maybe, they're not fortunate, they don't have it yet.
Yeah. Anything else? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jāi
samavidhā bhakti-vṛnda ki
jāi
jāi nitai gaudakena.